invite the children now to come forward and to grab some seats here on the front row and maybe even up here on the floor. And I'm going to also encourage teenagers. So this is first grade all the way up through high school. So teens, you know who you are. Come down and join us. Nico. Hannah, yeah. And maybe what I could do is get the teens to kind of intersperse yourselves around the kids, thereby being deputized as authority to maintain control. Okay. Good morning. How are y'all doing today? All right. Good. Good. Does this feel like you've been a long time in church already this morning? Does it feel like you've been here a long time already? I know. Yeah. I know it's, and you're used to going to children's worship where it's really fun and fun things happen, and this is like not so funny. Anybody feel like that? You can nod your head. You don't have to raise your hand and embarrass your parents. Well, I understand that. I was a child once, and I felt like that. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you're here for, all right? Why you're here in this room, and why you're here, and why you'll be next week, where you're going to be in your classrooms, maybe learning at home. How many of you guys are homeschoolers? Any homeschoolers? Yep, okay, a couple. One, two technically, I guess. And then how many of you guys go to public school? Public school. How many of you guys go to Christian school? Okay, how many of you guys go to private school that's not Christian school? How many of you guys? All right, well, I know, where's the rest of the teenagers? Ryan, all right, come on down. I know there's more of you that show up on Sunday nights, so. All right, very good. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the theme at Old Orchard. How many of you guys, not including teenagers, how many of you guys know that there's a theme that Old Orchard has adopted this year for ourselves as a church? Anybody know that? Anybody know what it is? How many of the teens, you know that we have a theme for this next year? Do you know what it is, Hannah? No, you don't? Okay. Any of you guys know what it is? All right, well, that's a good thing, because I picked that. That's what we're going to talk about. But the first thing I want to talk about is the first point number one. So write this down in your spiritual journals, all right? Point number one is that life is difficult. Life is really hard. You guys sometimes have a hard life, so you feel like your things aren't fair. Like it's not fair that you had to stay so long in church today. You didn't have children's worship. Or sometimes you feel like you want to do something, it's just not fair. So, well, that, you know what? Just, you know, your parents will tell you this. Life is just really difficult sometimes. Life is hard. And one of the reasons life is hard is because we are sinful. We break the rules. We disobey our parents. We disobey God. We do things we shouldn't do, and we suffer. A few days ago, you know what I did? I parked in a place where I wasn't supposed to park. I broke a rule. And you know what happened? I got a ticket. I got a ticket from a policeman. And I was so angry. But I had broke the rule. I had brought that upon myself. And you know, you guys do that. I know you do. Your parents do that. We break the rules and we make life hard for ourselves because we are sinful. We do things we shouldn't do. Well, you know what? The other thing is this. And some of you guys might have experienced this. Life is difficult also because of the sin around us. Life is difficult because we live in a world that isn't working the way God originally made it to work. Because, you know, there are weeds growing in my wife's garden, and there are mean people in the world, and sometimes they're the people we're related to, and sometimes they're our neighbors, and sometimes they're people in our classrooms, and because of that, sometimes life is just really hard. Let me give you an example. I'll tell you about this young boy. His name is George, all right? This is a true story. George lived not too long ago, but it was long before you were born, long before I was born, actually, too. And he was born actually right here in Missouri. He was born to a slave family. I'll get your questions in a little bit, Max. Hold on. He was born to a slave family. So he was born a slave. And he had lots of brothers and sisters. As a matter of fact, almost as many, well, maybe as half as many kids there are here, maybe as half. He had that many brothers and sisters. But you know what? Every single one of them died. Every single one of them. And as a matter of fact, when he was a baby, his mother and his sister, who didn't live, his mother and his sister and him, they were kidnapped. They were taken away from their slave family and taken away. And for many, many, many days, They never found him. But then they found him, and he was still alive, and he was orphaned, and he was near death. But his mother and sister were killed, and he never saw his own mom or any of his brothers and sisters. Although I think supposedly he had one brother that did survive later in life. Anyway, another thing that happened was he couldn't go to school. But his slave owners, oddly enough, ironically, one of his slave owner was named, his name was Moses, his wife began to teach him. And he began to learn, and he wanted to go to school. But the closest school that he could go to was 10 miles away. And you know what? He walked that distance. He went that distance to go to school because he longed to learn. Anyway, that's the life of George a little bit. Maybe I'll tell you a little bit later about his life. But his life, can you agree? Raise your hand if you think his life was very hard. Raise your hand if you think his life is harder than yours. That's right. You can put your hands down. Well, his life was hard. Now, he had some choices, and you guys have choices. Let me tell you about your choices. George had some choices when life was hard. He knew he had a rough life, and sometimes you guys feel that. Here's some choices. Let me give them to you. One, you can act like you don't care. You can act like you just don't care about anything. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You could shut down your heart and just be like a vegetable and just pretend like nothing matters, and I don't care about anything and anyone. My life is hard. It's not fair, and therefore, I'm just going to quit even trying. Okay? People do that. Adults do it. The second thing is you can fight back. You can get angry. You can hit. You can yell. You can scream. You can push. You can punch. Or you can just be angry in your heart. Anybody ever get angry and you don't do anything, but you just feel it in your heart? Yeah. Yeah, me too sometimes, believe it or not. Yeah, and we all feel that way. Adults feel that way too. We get angry and we just stay angry. And sometimes we get angry at God and we blame him. The third option for you guys is you can feel sorry for yourself. You can just feel like you're a loser. I'm a loser. Life is hard. It's not fair. And I guess just that's the way it is. I'm just a loser. Nobody's ever going to care about me. Nobody's going to ever think I'm important. And that's just the way it is. And you know, that's your third option. But I want to give you another option, okay? Those are not the only options. I want to give you a better option. And it's one word, and I'm going to give you a hint, all right? I'm going to give you a hint. Who could tell me what this is? You can just say it out loud. What is this? This is a boomerang, right? Can you guess what I'm getting at? Huh? All right. I got another clue for you. What's this? That's right. That's right. This is Ben Killeen's. Where is Ben? He's a young person. He's supposed to be down here. Anyway, this is Ben's. Ben let me shoot this the other day, and I almost damaged myself because I was holding it wrong, and anyway. But I got the hang of it. It's really complicated. It's a beautiful bow and arrow. It's very expensive. He saved his money and bought this. So these two things give us a hint as to the one word that is another option for you when life is rough, when life is hard. These two things have something in common. I'm going to show you one more thing. Now, don't get scared, all right? All right. All right, here we go. Let's see. All right, don't get scared. Don't get scared. All right. There's nothing in there, parents. Nothing in there, all right? Just to let you know, you don't need to be afraid. All right, now. Anybody tell me what this is? Say it out loud. This is a shotgun. This is actually a sawed-off shotgun, and I borrowed it from the Woodards. This is the Woodards gun. I have no idea what the Woodards are doing with a sawed-off shotgun. But I have noticed that Thaddeus and Simeon are well-behaved children. I have noticed that. Anyway, so these are the three things: a sawed-off, a shotgun, a boomerang, and back there we have the bow and arrow. What do those three things have in common? Somebody tell me. Yeah, Max. Battle, okay, yeah. What do you do with all three of those things? Fun, is there fun? Can be fun, yeah. That's right. James said it, you can hunt. That's the word I want you guys to hear. When you're going through life and life is hard, you can hunt. And here's what I mean by that, okay? And this is where we get to the theme for Old Orchard Church. It's It's, if I can put it in a different word, we're called to hunt. That's what we're called to do. When life is hard, even when life is good, what we are called, the main thing for you all as you grow is to hunt. All right? Now let me prove it to you. In the Bible, the theme for this year is from Hosea chapter 6. Hosea chapter 6, verse 3, and it says this. Let us know the Lord. Let us press on to know him. Let us know the Lord. Theodore, you need to sit down, buddy. Let us know the Lord. Let us press on to know the Lord. Now, the word in there that I want you to pay attention to is the word press on. Now, that's two words, technically. But in the original language, in the Hebrew, it's one word, and that word means to hunt. It means to pursue. It means to go after. It means to strive. Now, in this day and age, when we get hungry, we can go to the grocery store, or you guys can go to the refrigerator or to the cupboard, and you can find something, you can get it and eat it. But a long time ago, and in some cultures, like in Australia, in the backwoods, they have to go out and find their food. They have to go get it. Right? They have to hunt. And God has created you guys to hunt, to pursue, to press on, to pursue him, to pursue him. Now, the problem is, here's the difficulty with that, that pressing on to know the Lord, just like you guys right now are, you know, this morning you're like, I don't want to be here, I'd rather be doing something else. Well, guess what? The world, people around you have some other options. Here's some other suggestions. Let me tell you some other suggestions. If you don't want to hunt the Lord, if you don't want to pursue knowing God, the world has some very exciting options. Here they are. Here's the first one. The first one is to be the very best. Be the best. The other day I was hanging out with the teens, the guys, and we were having video game night. We do that every once in a while. And you know what the goal of the night was? To be the best. We were playing these games, and there was lots of shooting involved. It was, you know, this game called Halo, and Taylor Branson's the best of everybody that I've ever met. And I am the worst. I'm the worst. I'm the worst one there. I got demolished. Everybody was killing me. It was like, fun, let's kill Pastor Mark on the video game. And it was, and you know what? I don't care about video games. I don't care about them. And if I had my way, I would say that video games, for the most part, are a waste of time. They're a waste of time. You could be doing better things with your time, all right? But that's a whole nother sermon. What I want to tell you this is, part of that is because I was angry that I was so bad, and I was trying so hard. Taylor was giving me hints, and I just couldn't do it. I could not do it. I was the worst. But the world's going to say it's very important that you be the best. Now, it may not be video games. It may be the best on your soccer team. It may be the smartest in your class. It may be to be the best looking. It may be to be the smartest, the best. I mean, it could be anything. It could be to have the most money. It could be the most powerful, the best fighter, the best hunter, whatever. Okay? That's what the world wants you to believe, that that's the most important thing, that what matters most is to be the best. Now, here's the second thing that the world's going to tell you. What's most important is to be happy. That's another thing the world's going to tell you. They're going to say, you know what? It doesn't matter if you know God or not, because what matters most is that you're happy, that you feel good. It doesn't matter who you have to hurt. It doesn't matter what you have to do. It doesn't matter if you just throw off your responsibilities and quit trying and quit doing anything. Whatever makes you happy, if it makes you happy to mistreat people, if it makes you happy to disobey your parents, you do that, because what makes you happy is what's most important and nothing else matters. What matters is what makes you happy. That's the second thing. Now, the third thing is this. And this one I would say is the worst lie of all. It's that you be good. Now that sounds strange, because you should be good, right? And you're thinking, well, you're a pastor. You're supposed to be telling us to be good, Theodore. You're supposed to be good, Theodore. I'm telling you that right now. But that's a lie. And I'll tell you why it's a lie. It's kind of confusing. The world's going to tell you that you should obey your parents, and that you should go to church, and you should read your Bible, and you should do your homework, and that that's the most important thing in the whole world, that that's the most important thing, is to be good, to be a good young person, to be a good teenager, to be a good student, to be a good this, to be a good that, to be a good Christian. And you know what? It is important to be good. But you know, it's also important to be happy. It's also important to be happy. And it's also important to be the best. I mean, it's not bad to be the best. It's not bad to be happy. And it's not bad to be good. But where the lie is, and this is what I want you to hear, this is a lie. The lie is this, that it's the most important thing, that it matters more than anything else that you're good, that it matters more than anything else that you're happy, or that it matters more than anything else that you're the best. And it's a lie. And I just want you guys to hear that loud and clear. Because you're called to pursue, to hunt something better. I don't want you to spend your time hunting rats and mice and cockroaches. I want you to hunt something that is good for you and that is the best, and that is to pursue and to hunt knowing God. Now, here's the problem. Every single one of you guys, you're going to pursue those things. I know it. Because everybody out here, all your parents, we've done it too. We have pursued things other than God. We have done it. And you're going to do it too. And my hope and my prayer is that very quickly you will learn that that is not satisfying, that pursuing God above all things is what's most important. Now, let me tell you a story. The other day, I was looking out. I was putting the boys to bed. Actually, Alice was putting the boys to bed. I was wandering around the living room. And I looked out the window, and I saw down, it was dark, and I saw down on the sidewalk of a young boy, the same age, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks older than Abel. So he's just a little, right at 2 years old. And I was just watching him, and my mind was somewhere else. And he's walking down the sidewalk. And then it occurred to me that I didn't see his parents anywhere. And so I just watched, and I thought, you know, surely there's a parent down there. And I knew this boy. His name was Sam. He's a neighbor of ours. I've known him since he was born. And I thought, you know, something's not right. So I went down there, and I went out across the street. And by this time, he was heading at a rapid speed down the street toward the intersection at the end of our street. And I went after him, and I came up to him, and I said, Sam, hi, buddy. Where are you going? And he just looked at me like I was an alien. And I said, let's go back and find your mom. And so I picked him up. And you know what? He didn't say, thanks, Mark, for saving my life from certain destruction. You know what he did? He slapped me in the face. Why are you laughing at that? That is not funny. He slapped me in the face, and actually, I had a little cut right here, a little bloody mark. And so I took him, and I held him tight and started walking back, and he started kicking me and hitting me. This really happened, and I was like, what? You know? But I knew that he didn't want me to take him back home. He wanted to keep going. I found out later he had gotten through the gate in his house and came down the stairs and went out the front door, and his parents didn't even know it. So I took him back home, and his mom was so glad to see him. I know it had been so afraid they had started looking for him. But here's the thing about that, you know. That's like God. Because God, even though we want to pursue other things, and I'd say you guys will pursue other things in your life. Some of you will for a long time. God, in his goodness, comes after us, and he grabs us, and he takes us, and he holds us tight. And sometimes that hurts. I held him tight because he was kicking me. I could have put him down and said, well, if that's the way you're going to act, then just see you later. But I didn't do that. I held him tight. And sometimes that means that God takes away things from us that we really think are the most important thing so that we will know that he is most important. And the Bible says in Proverbs 14, it says, there is a way that seems right to us, to man, to people. There's a way that seems right to man, but in the end it leads to what? Someone tell me what it says. What?
Disappointment.
No, worse. Somebody else say it. Yes. Death. That's right. It leads to death. Now that seems harsh, but it's true. Pursuing anything other than God. Now, it's good to pursue things like, you know, in our lives, like education. We'll talk about that. But when the most important thing is not God, it leads to death. Now, I'm going to prove that to you, okay, here in a minute. I want to tell you this. Now, what does that have to do with school? Here it is. Here's what this has to do with school. There's a temptation for all of us, for you guys, temptation, to believe that if God is most important, then nothing else matters. Nothing matters. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if I do well in school. Doesn't matter if I do well in math. Doesn't matter if I do well in science. Doesn't matter if I obey my parents or not. It just doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because, you know, Pastor Mark said, the only thing that matters is pursuing God. Well, that's a lie too. That's a lie. Because the truth is that when God is the most important thing and pursuing Him, pursuing knowledge of God is the most important thing, then everything else matters a great deal. And I'm going to put it like this. So put this down in your spiritual notebooks. The more you understand truth, the more you understand truth, and that's truth that comes through learning, education, science, math, English, art. The more you understand truth, the better you can know God. Romans 1 actually talks about God's invisible qualities, God's nature, parts of who He is revealed through creation. Okay? So we come to know God through learning. So that frees us up to pursue knowledge. Now I'm gonna get my friend Jacob. Jacob Moeller is a math teacher, and I thought that if I could get Jacob to prove that math is important for knowing God, then everything else would just be cake, right? Because in my mind, when I was growing up, I always thought math just wasn't important. Come on down, Jacob. Math just wasn't important at all. But let me tell you, math, presumably, is very important to understanding God. And I asked Jacob to prove that, not only to you, but to me too. So, yep. Okay. All right, he's getting things ready. And any questions? All right, Jay, yep, Max, or something to say?
I'm having a little struggle with one of my friends. His mm-hmm. name is Isaac. And, well, it'll really appreciate me if you guys pray for him.
I think that's a great idea,
Max. He's learning to know God.
I think that's a great, great, great thing. And I think that's important also for you guys to remember that part of when we know God, we also desire that our friends know God as well. And we should be praying. And we will be praying for you, Max, and your friend Isaac. So, okay. I will hold it. Yeah. Okay.
Can you all hear me?
You can't.
Okay. We're going to get there in a moment, but I need to couch this in a way that hopefully makes sense of these bullet points. And you'll probably have to lift it up so they can
okay.
see.
Yep.
So to begin, I actually find that interesting, this hunting idea, because since a little kid, Ann Woodard's dad got me interested in math, and he connected math with God and with nature in a way that most of you, I think, wouldn't have had that experience. So I'm a math teacher today because I'm hunting God in math, actually. This book here is called The History of Calculus, probably a book that some of you or none of you will ever touch. Why I bring this up is I don't understand all of it either, but a point that was made in this book was that calculus was come about through a lot of thought mathematically, but eventually found its way in what it is because there were theologians grappling with math and with God, and the idea of infinity allowed people, mathematicians, to say maybe there's something here. And it's the idea of God being infinite that gave birth to some of these ideas. Okay. What I'm going to be saying comes a lot from this article in Mars Hill Review, and the author calls this Infinity and Deity, Glimpses of God in Mathematics. I'm going to read this quickly, and then we'll go over my trying to unpack a little. Mathematics is the study of the infinite. We use calculus to measure with infinitely small increments. We work with infinite sets of numbers. We divide an interval into an infinite set of subintervals to determine continuity of functions, blah, blah, blah. Okay? I know that that doesn't sound like, okay, I'm going to get this, but stay with me. I'm trying to boil it down to get here. Well, back in the ancient world, there was a philosopher called Zeno, and Zeno had a paradox, or many paradoxes, And because of these paradoxes, the Greeks actually didn't know if the infinity existed because it didn't make sense anymore. So let's go. His paradox has to do with infinity and beyond. Let's talk about infinity here. So can you all see this? Okay. So I want to talk about God and the infinite, and let's see what you know. And if you don't know much, that's all right. I don't know much either. Is there a last number? What would you say? Okay, so if there is, what would you call it?
Two.
Two.
It goes right here.
But couldn't we add one to two, and now we have a new number? And then can we add one to that, and then we have a new number? You get the idea. So you think of the biggest number that you can, and we can always add one to it. So then it would be bigger yet. And then now we've captured a new number. Maybe that's the biggest one, but can't we add another one to it? You see how that goes? And so, is there a last number? No. So do you see how it's natural that there's an infinite collection of something? Because you can always add one more. And if you think that's it, well, you can add one more. No, one more. Okay. What is one plus one?
Two.
Okay, that seems to make sense, right?
Too easy.
There's a reason why I actually have the ones drawn the way they are, not because I'm artistic, but I want to keep this one here so that those of us who are kids could think of one being a pen or an apple or a dollar. But I'm going somewhere that a kid can't go with me, but you adults, I think, can. Okay? So I'm going to come back to this. Let's now go into, we're talking about infinity. A set is a collection of objects. I could have a collection of pens. I could have a collection of kids. I'm going to call that a set. Not a family, but a set, okay? A set is infinite if one of its subsets, are we okay with subsets? Okay, so a subset is, how do I want to say this in kids' terms? Anybody have thoughts?
A small group. Keep it short.
A small group. So we have you all, and then we could have all the girls in this group. That's a subset, because there are boys and girls. Okay? So a subset is just a collection of the bigger one, and we divide it however we want. But a subset that has the same number of objects as the original. So let me just go here, and I'll give you an example. A set is infinite if one of its subsets has the same number of objects as the original. Molar, what's going on? So do you see I needed two of these? Okay, look at my first set. I call it A. Do you see it starts off with one, then two, then three, and it ends at seven, right, as far as what I drew? But you see the dot, dot, dot. What does a dot, dot, dot mean? Keeps going, but you get the pattern, right? You add one more. And it goes on forever. So could we call A big set? Okay? Might we call A an infinite set? Okay, but let's go back to our definition. What is an infinite set? It has a subset that has the same number of objects, right? So what is my set B? What do you notice about that? All even numbers, right? It's a subset. Can you see that even numbers are a subset of my original? Okay, now how many even numbers are there?
Infinite.
Infinitely many, right? So could we, you see how they have the same number of numbers? Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Now let me ask you this. If I were to add the amount of numbers or members in this set A with set B, what kind of a set do I get? Don't I get an infinite number of members? So if I add set A, which has an infinite number of objects in it, with set B that has an infinite number of objects in it, don't I get an infinite set, set with infinite number? Okay? What is 1 plus 1 if I'm thinking about an infinite set plus an infinite set equals an one infinite set? Does that make sense? Now, it doesn't here. Does it make sense out there? An infinite set plus an infinite set is an infinite set. Father, Son, Holy Spirit equals what?
Infinite.
One God. Right? Now, I'm not a theologian and I'm not dappling in the world of theology because I know God is not number, okay? But don't we have a doctrine that says that there are three in one? God is God, the Father. Jesus is God. The Holy Spirit is God. And somehow that's one God. One plus one in a finite world has to be the next value, two. In an infinite world, one plus one could be one. Is that weird? So keep in mind, when you use things, language that is, and you say in math, one plus one is two, be careful with what you're saying because it's more involved. And this article, and I'll be quiet in a moment. If anything made sense to you and you want to understand more fully, this article in the Mars Hill Review, pick up, read it. Because it's saying basically that when you think about infinity, there are many, many paradoxes that come about. And when we think about God, aren't there a lot of issues that really we need to wrestle with that seem to be, what's going on here? And his argument is that infinity is a huge concept causing a lot of paradoxes in the same way that God, knowing him, is kind of difficult at times. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Jacob. All right.
All right.
Well, you guys got a math lesson, and you didn't have to pay a dime for that. How about that? Now, I know that a lot of that was over my head, and so it might have been over your head too. Maybe not. I know some people are really good at math and others aren't. But he just demonstrated to us that math is something that is important and helps us understand God, to know God. Now, before we go to communion, I want to finish the story about George. All right? Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Go ahead, Emmett. What are you going to say? You want the microphone. All right. Make it snappy.
When are you going to shoot it?
That's not going to happen here. I'm probably more scared of guns than you guys are, believe it or not.
Well, let me tell you about George. George grew up and he pursued God through education. And you do know that he became, listen to this, he became probably one of the most famous scientists in Missouri and maybe the United States, George Washington Carver. And he didn't technically invent peanut butter, but he made it famous. But he came up with 300 uses for the peanut. And in doing that, he helped the farmers in our country many years ago to establish a sustainable living. Many of them so they would not have to have slaves. This is what George Washington Carver did, and he did it because he pursued his education. And you know why he pursued his education? Listen to this. You know what he said? Listen to what he said. He said, George Washington Carver said this, Jesus Christ is my only motivation for pursuing science and understanding creation. Jesus Christ is my only motivation. That's George Washington Carver, and he was a very, very talented and gifted scientist and a very learned, educated man. And I want to encourage you guys, as you go back to school tomorrow, when you think it's not important, you think other things are more important, to know that God has put you there for a reason, and it's to study hard, and it's to do your work, and it is to obey your parents, and it is to be good and to be happy and to be the best, but so that you can know him above all things. That's what's most important.